Hi, this is Molly Poggles. Welcome to the Faith Center Podcast Network. We want to be a source of hope, joy, and encouragement on your drive to work, your time at home, or anywhere in between. Be sure to like and subscribe to get all of our daily and weekly content. For more information about Faith Center and the podcast network, please visit our website, lg4squared.com, lg, the number 4, square.com. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, you can email the show at podcast at lg4square.com. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Barnabas Project. Royce and I are just sitting here discussing what we're going to be diving into here in Revelation chapter 12. And then we realized we're actually wasting all this good content. We're not going to remember what we talked about.
We should probably just record.
So we just decided to press record and continue from there. So thanks for joining us. We've been going for about a half hour now.
Yeah.
Royce was generous enough to stop on his lunch break and record this new chapter with us, and again we're in Revelation 12 today. So this is a really good chapter here because it kind of has this grand step back and look at the big picture thing about it, and we're going to get into that today. But I want to just start by reading that scripture. If you hadn't picked up on this already, it's just me and Royce today.
Yep.
How you doing over there?
I'm doing good.
Did you get something to eat today?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Good. This is something that I almost forget to do every day, but I was fed today too. We probably should have planned our lunch out together.
Oh yeah, next time.
Next time. Okay, so Revelation chapter 12, verse 1. We're going to start with verse 1 and move through verse 6 and then talk about the players at hand here. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. Another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads, that's plural, on his heads, 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. She gave birth to a male child, one who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days. So there's that number again.
There's that number. We'll get into that, I promise. I have a whole lot on it. But before we start, I wanted to ask, did you ever watch the show Lost?
Oh, yeah.
Were you a Lost fan?
Oh, man. That's one of the few series that I've seen twice.
I love the show, especially the early seasons. Mm-hmm. But the show was a little hard to follow sometimes because of all the jumping around in the timelines.
Yes.
You know, so at one moment, you're in the main timeline. Then that little whoosh sound hits, right?
Every time you'd be like, when are we?
Like the first couple times, you're like, I don't know what's happening. But then you're like, you can't fool me again, Lost. I know this is a flashback now. You know, you
kind of just get comfortable with it after a while.
You get comfortable.
You're not wrong.
And I feel like this is Lost storytelling at its finest, because we're going to jump around. Even in this 6 verses, there was past, present, and future all over the place. And so this is what I really want to encourage the listeners to take a deep look at. You know, if you're listening to this in your car or on your run or whatever, pull the Bible out when you get home and just really sit with these verses for a little bit. Because I feel if you want to understand Revelation, it's really important you understand where these fit into the timeline of history, not just this one chapter, not just the book of Revelation, but the history of the Bible, of the world, of mankind, because this is what this is all about. And so this is your Lost chapter, and we'll try and make the little swishy sounds when we do a flashback, but
you'll have to give me the signal. I'm saving it, but I think I got a good one for you.
Okay. All right. So you had, as we were talking beforehand, you had a really cool way to kind of like set up what we're talking about here. And so I just thought you should run with that first.
Do you want me to go all the way to the end, or?
I think you should. I think you should just jump in there and show them what we're talking about here.
Okay, so I put together a little screenplay.
Yeah, the screenplay, which actually works with the Lost metaphor pretty well at this particular junction. Oh, and for those of you who don't know, a little backstory about me. My degree is actually in media arts. And so when I was in school, we had to make movies all the time. And screenplays were a couple things that I wrote from time to time.
Really?
Yeah.
You should have wrote this, not me.
I didn't think of it. You did. And I just think this is cool. So in a screenplay, you have the dialogue that people say, but then you have stage direction. Huh. And stage direction kind of tells you where people are going and what they're doing. But because they're doing it, it's all visual. It never actually, what hits the screen is the visual component of the person doing the thing. So what Chong's going to read to you are the screenplay stage direction notes that he wrote for this chapter.
You'll need to pause me from time to time and add little notations. Does that sound good?
Okay.
Okay. So here's the screenplay for Revelation 12. Woman, clothed with the sun, moon under her feet, crown of 12 stars, pregnant with pains about to give birth. Great red dragon. That was the set we transitioned. Great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, 7 diadems, tail cast down 1/3 of the stars. Male child, one who will rule with a rod of iron, but he is caught up to God and his throne.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Woman fled for 3.5 years to be nourished. Cut. Scene in heaven. Michael and angels fought Satan and he was cast down. Loud voice. Salvation, power, kingdom, authority of Christ has come. Accuser thrown down. Conquered by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. Rejoicing in heaven. Woe to earth. The devil cast down and has a short time. Dragon pursued woman. Woman given eagle's wings to escape into the wilderness to be nourished for 3.5 years. Serpent pours out water from mouth to sweep away woman. Earth swallows up river. Dragon enraged. Dragon makes war with the rest of the woman's offspring, those who keep the commandments and hold to the testimony of Jesus. Dragon stood on the sand of the sea. End scene.
I forgot to add some extra wishes. I was really in the moment, but Chong kind of jumped ahead from what we had read in the scripture, but that's would be the stage direction. I think that's a really cool way to look at what's being presented here in Revelation 12. The way that I kind of approached this was very similar, but less fanciful.
Less action.
Less action. A lot less wishing sounds, yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So what's happening here, I feel, and you'll find different commentaries on this chapter. And in fact, if you thought the last chapter, chapter 11, was a dividing chapter in
yes,
in eschatology, 12 is probably as equally as dividing.
Uh-huh.
Because if you take a linear approach to Revelation, you're going to run into 12 and you're going to hit a major wall.
That's true.
Because there's some stuff happening here that is a little bit out of a linear timeline. And by a little bit, I mean none of it is really fitting into a linear timeline for any kind of logic.
Try and put yourself in John's shoes for a second. He was just given this vision of the two witnesses and what their time is going to be like on earth. And then he's given the 7th trumpet and he's kind of going through that and they're giving praise in heaven. And then all of a sudden, whoosh,
right,
scene in heaven.
Flashback. And it is kind of a flashback.
You kind of have to imagine John standing there looking up into the stars going, what is happening? This thing does not stop. It gets weirder every time.
And he's a trooper, you know, he does his very finest at relaying this to us. But what I feel 12 is bringing to the table is an introduction to the characters that are really prevalent in mm-hmm. Revelation.
Yeah.
And it's a funny way to do it, but I also think it's an appropriate way to do it because Revelation starts with the churches. And we had an epic time going through the 7 churches. But what the 7 churches quickly turn into is a call to action for the churches in getting right with Christ.
Yeah.
And then it's this explosion of Christ's majesty. I mean, you know, for those of you who listen to our chapter 4 and 5, you could tell how excited we were to get a study the throne room of God for that brief amount of time, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really what Revelation's about. It's mm-hmm. about Christ. So to me, as an author, to put these people here in the middle isn't out of line. It's not weird, because the real character, the real person that we care about the stage direction of in Revelation is Christ. And we got to learn about him first.
Yeah.
And so as we are looking at this chapter 12, a couple things stand out. There's a woman, and she gives birth to a child. There's a dragon, and there's Michael the archangel, who we'll get into in the next section of scripture that we read. And then as we jump into 13, because really 12 and 13 bridge pretty well.
Yeah.
You find that there's three more. Well, there's technically two more characters, because Satan's mentioned in 12. But then there's two more characters, the Antichrist and the false prophet. So this is a very good history lesson for us to decode who the characters are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all that amazing of a decoding, because I feel like they're kind of straightforward. But the first one that I really want to talk about is Christ, because the book's about Christ.
Sure.
And
so you're going to go to the middle so that
I'm going to go to the middle. So
okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
She gave birth. Yeah. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God, to his throne. So where are we in time at this particular moment of what John's seeing?
Well, historically, we are at the birth of Christ.
Right. And so to establish, number one, that this is Christ, because I feel like that may not be clear to everybody.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy on this, but I this is Christ.
This is Christ. So Revelation 19:11 says, "Then I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it was called Faithful and True." Yet another cool title for Christ that wasn't even mentioned in the first chapter.
Mm.
"And in righteousness, he judges and wages war. His eyes are a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems, and he has a name written on him, which no one knows except himself. He is clothed with a robe dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. And the armies which are in heaven were clothed in fine linen, white and clean, were following him on white horses. From his mouth comes a sharp sword, so that with it he may strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron, and he treads the winepress of the fierce wrath of the God Almighty." So we have a very clear description of Christ.
Yeah.
Very, 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 very clear description of Christ. And one of these descriptions is that he will rule the nations with a rod of iron. So to go back to 12, you could stop right there and you could just be like, totally.
Yeah.
Totally get it.
Cool, 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 cool.
But there's more mm-hmm. on this whole realm of things. I'm going to jump to Psalm 2. I have so many sticky notes in here.
Yeah, you do.
It's kind of one of those days. So Psalms 2, verse 7, "I will surely tell you the decree of the Lord. He said to me, 'You are my son. Today I've begotten you. Ask of me, and I will surely give the nations as your inheritance, and the very ends of the earth as your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall shatter them like earthenware.'" So here we have an Old Testament prophecy to the coming of Christ and the ruling of them with a rod of iron. But we're not going to stop there, right? Because we never stop there. We're going to go actually to a place that we've been to a whole bunch in Revelation. And that's Isaiah chapter 11.
Yep.
So this is located in right above the section. Well, I'm just going to read it. We'll just read it.
Let's just read it.
Let's just do it. "Then a shoot will spring up from the stem of Jesse, and a branch from his roots will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and strength, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord, and he will not judge by what his eyes see, nor make a decision by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he will judge the poor and decide the fairness for the afflicted of the earth. And he will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth and with the breath of his lips, and he will slay the wicked." So this imagery of Jesus ruling with a rod is very prevalent throughout scripture. And even Daniel touches on this in Daniel chapter 7, 13 through 14. You'd think I'd just have Daniel perpetually pulled up here.
I know, right?
So Daniel chapter 7, 13 and 14 says,
we're going to be in Daniel 7 a lot today.
We are. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, the clouds of heaven, one like the Son of Man was coming, and he came up to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples and nations of men and of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which will not pass away. His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. So Christ is coming. He will rule the nations with a rod of iron. So in this Revelation chapter 12, the male child, we're seeing something through the eyes of John that had happened already at this point. Mary had given birth to a Christ child. Mm-hmm. Israel essentially had given birth to a Christ child, but we have to declare the woman in a second.
We'll get there.
So being that this child is Christ because of these scriptures that show to this promise of him ruling the nations, and some very specifically even likening it to the rod of iron mentioned here, we can safely make this that this is Christ, but he's not ruling the nations yet. So even in this one verse, we have the past and the present colliding in a prophecy that goes along with the other prophecies that we've already talked about.
Yeah, we see that the idea of Christ ruling the nations and coming back in great glory, you know, to a futurist anyway, would say that he's still to come. And there is a little nugget that's given here in verse 5. She gave birth to the male child who's to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, but her child was caught up to God and to his throne. So we saw that when Jesus ascended, he was caught up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his ascension there. And I would say that matches really well with where we see Christ right now.
Yeah.
You know, having not yet returned to rule with a rod of iron, but being with his Father at the throne.
Sure. And we see that in verse 10, and we'll get there in a minute, that things do change pretty drastically.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's a great introduction into who the child is.
Yeah.
And I like starting with the child because...
Should start with Jesus.
I feel like we should start with Jesus.
Well, now we'll jump into the woman. Who's the woman?
Right.
And I do like that you just brought up that the very first segment of Revelation was the churches. Well, it was the introduction still to Christ. So sure. You kind of rewrote that for us. So I like that.
Right. The titles of Christ.
Yeah. So now we'll jump into who the woman is, and we'll kind of wrap our heads around these concepts that are given here in Revelation and other chapters in the Bible.
Yeah. So I think the first interesting thing to key in on is this verbiage, a great sign. You know, I was really struck by the word great because it's the only time that this idea of a sign and the word great are associated. Not that other things aren't great, but there's other mentions of signs, like when we talk about Satan, then another sign appeared in heaven, but it's not a great sign. This word great, it means particular of space and its dimensions. A mass or a weight, a compass to compass and extent of large space, to measure the height and the length, the structure or age, meaning something very old, or the number of quantity. So that would be the translations of this word great.
That'd be the times that you would use that word in the original text?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so as we jump into it, I feel like there's a lot of interest around using this word great in correlation to the woman, because the assumption that we're going to make and that we're going to probably try and prove our point towards is that the woman is Israel.
Yeah.
And so if you said that space and dimensions was the applicable word here, it's interesting to me because so much land was promised to Israel. Mm. If you said something to the extent of encompassing a large extent of large space, you know, you could liken that, all that land that was promised to them.
Okay.
If you said to the effect of something very old, well, their culture is very old. In fact, they're the oldest people group that's still currently active. And if you said number or quantity, you would also be correct in the promise that God made to Abraham that his seed would be like the sand of the seashores. So I think there's an interesting parallel to all the ways you could use great and how they would all actually fit to Israel in this scenario.
And when we say that this woman is Israel, we're not excluding Mary for also being the woman.
Right.
So keep that in mind as we go on, that this isn't a linear moment. Again, this is a much grander picture of things that we have seen and things that we are going to see, and really a bigger picture of things in the heavenlies as well.
Well, Mary was Jewish, so just by default, she fits into the category mm-hmm. of being from Israel.
Yeah.
And so I think that works out really well. But to really dive into the imagery around the woman, the sun and the moon and the stars, we go all the way back to Genesis to do this.
Yeah.
And just like so much in Revelation, you need to be in Genesis a lot.
It's true.
To understand Revelation. So Genesis chapter 37, verses 9 through 11, I'm just going to read this little part here. It says, well, I'll give the backstory. So Joseph is the son of Jacob, who has been renamed Israel by the Lord. Jacob has taken two wives, and he ends up having 12 sons. So that's probably enough of the backstory that you need. So Jacob had a dream. Now he had still another dream and related it to his brothers and said, lo, I have had still another dream, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. He related it to his father and to his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down before you to the ground? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. So I think in his anger, Jacob actually decodes the dream for us.
Yeah.
You know, because it becomes clear that the stars are his brothers.
Yeah, and he is the 12th star.
Right, and yeah. Joseph is the 12th star.
Yep.
And that the sun is him, the father.
Yeah.
And the moon is the mother. So when you're talking about Israel, and you're talking about that imagery of having a sun, a moon, and these 12 stars, this dream that Joseph has really kind of brings it all together for you in decoding, like, oh, it's referring to the whole nation of Israel. And yes, Mary would fall into that, being of Jewish descent, being of the line of David. She was part of this. But as a culture, as a people group, the Jewish people group birthed Christ. You know, it's from the root of Jesse, as we read in Isaiah,
yep.
that Christ springs forward. And so I think this is interesting because as this dream illustrates, it angers his brothers, and they sell Joseph into slavery after this. Joseph goes to Egypt, where he makes a name for himself after a lot of years of heartache, and actually sets up and decodes the Pharaoh's dream of 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine, which eventually bring his family, his father and his mother, and his 11 brothers to him to bow down to him to get food that they need. You know, so this is such an interesting verse to tie into what's happening in Revelation and what's going on and how.
So would you say that in this particular scenario, you've got Joseph, and in this sort of looking to the future context, he would be of the line of Judah, and then you've got the other tribes bowing down to him?
I think that that story just helps us decode that Israel is the representation of the sun, the moon, and the 12 stars.
Okay.
I don't know as if the bowing down is necessarily relevant to the character of the woman that's mentioned in 12, but the story, in a very simple, super short little way, decodes something for us later on in Revelation. And I don't know why it's important, only in that the original promise for the people of Israel started with Abraham. Abraham transferred that covenant, that promise, to his son Isaac. Isaac transferred it through the birthright to Jacob, which is a super cool story and also super weird. And we should definitely talk about it someday, but not today.
Full of deception. And
or is it? I have some thoughts on that. But it's transferred to Jacob, and I feel like that's...
Does that thought have something to do with smoke from another village?
It does.
Oh, I thought so. Nice.
So I think that's what the imagery of the sun and the moon is really there for. The 12 stars is pretty clear, like the 12 tribes, but the transferring of the covenant down from Abraham, I think, is important. And so it's really this culmination of this covenant with Abraham being transferred to Jacob and then ultimately being transferred to his 12 sons, which become the 12 tribes of Israel. Did you have any thoughts you wanted to add to the identity of the woman?
No, that's exactly where I was going to go with it, is that she's Israel.
Before we move on to the dragon, one thing that I wanted to point out in verse 2, she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain to give birth. Mm-hmm. This is a tad bit speculation, but there's also some commentaries that kind of come along and really support this speculation. Israel was, you know, if you look at it that way, giving birth to Christ. And we're, you know, almost at Christmas time, so this kind of, you'll hear about a lot of Christmas stories and kind of get refreshed in your mind.
Yeah.
Well, from the time of the end of the Old Testament until John came, I believe was about 400 years. And basically the people were crying out, but God wasn't answering through the prophets like they'd been accustomed to having. And so that line of the prophets kind of goes away for an extended period of time. So when it says that she was with child, meaning like she's about ready to give birth to Christ, and she was crying out, it could be referring to the people crying out at that time for God, crying out for the return of the Messiah. Or it could be referring to the fact that Israel was under Roman rule at that particular time that Christ was born. Mm. And they were servants. They were subject to the Roman Empire. And they weren't treated awfully at this particular point, but they weren't treated well either. So either one of those could be reasoning why this is mentioned, that she cried out in pain during her labor. Thought that was worth mentioning.
You know, another little topic on the woman Israel is that down in verse 6, we see that she fled into the wilderness, and she was there in a place that was prepared for her by God to basically be protected and nourished for 3.5 years.
Right.
And a lot of this comes into a, you know, a tribulation timeline aspect.
You just want to get into that?
Yeah, might as well. I mean, while we're on the woman.
That's a good point. So we're skipping around in timelines. Where are we in history at this particular point? Well, we're way past her giving birth to the child, even though verbiage-wise, that's not how it's implied. Mm-hmm. There's obviously about a 2,000-plus-year pause in between those in those verses. So that's a really long whoosh. You know, it's just still going and going, and you're like, are they ever going to get to the flash forward? Because sometimes those in Lost were flash forwards, too.
Wouldn't that be a funny joke to play that only you and I would get? That for, like, I don't know, 4 weeks of podcast, we just have this...
Nobody knows.
Intro, outro song. Yeah. We'd laugh every week, but everybody would be like, oh my gosh.
Now they're doing that again.
Why are we still doing this?
Those guys. So the woman fled, and Revelation 12:14 re-backs this up. So I feel like in our playful use of this whooshing thing, when we hit 12:14, we're only whooshing back to 12:6. Like, we're just re-saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Although some people might make an argument that they're two different events because two different ways of saying it are used. I don't know as if I agree with that on a personal level, but you're more than welcome to do the research and find out if you think 12:14 and 12:6 are the same or different events. But there's something really important that we need to talk about, and I'd hope Pastor Ted was going to join us this week because I wanted him to go over the all of it Discord part of this. Mm-hmm. But we'll just do it. You know, we're here. So there's a statement that Jesus makes in the Olivet Discourse that is really important to understanding what's happening here with this fleeing of Israel. So we're going to make a lot of whooshing sounds and jump all around the Bible and whatnot. So in Matthew chapter 24, Jesus is talking to his disciples about the end times. And we've already kind of gone over the first part of what he says the end times will be like and how it's very likened to the first seals and how they're presented. You know, the false Christ, the wars and rumors of wars, the famines and plagues. It lines up really well with what we see coming out of the seals. Then we hit verse 15 of chapter 24, and it breaks off entirely from lining up with those seals. So I'm going to read verse 15 through 22 here. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. Whoever is on the housetop must not go down to get the things that are in the house. Whoever is in the field must not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babes in those days. But pray that your flight will not be in winter or on a Sabbath, for then there will be a great tribulation such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will. So we get one piece of the puzzle here, right? We get this fleeing part.
Yeah.
Okay. So when does Jesus say to flee? After the abomination of desolation, which Daniel spoke of. He even tells us where to go to look at it, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. We're going to go to Daniel.
I love how John put sub notes in here for us already.
Let the reader understand. You better be looking at Daniel. So we've read this already once, and if I'm being honest, we're probably going to keep reading it several more times through this book.
Yeah.
Chapter 9 of Daniel, verse 27 says, "He will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering, and on the wing of abominations will come to one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate." So when we presented this the first time, we made the accusation that the one who makes a firm covenant is the Antichrist.
Yeah.
From there, making that declaration that this is the Antichrist, we're saying that he's going to make a covenant with many, including Israel, because this is about Israel. That's what's important. You have to remember that.
Yeah, we'll keep pointing people back to Israel really is the timepiece for these end times events. Anytime you're looking for a way to figure out how the clock works, it always points back to Israel. Don't be looking at America.
Right.
Thinking that,
oh, do not look at America.
Coronavirus.
No.
Rapture in 2 weeks. You
Nothing
know, don't,
like that.
Don't be saying that.
No.
It's always going to be Israel.
So he makes a firm covenant with many and Israel for 1 week. And we decoded that 1 week was 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of the week, so 3.5 years, he breaks that covenant. He performs the abomination at this particular time. And this essentially ruins the temple for the Jews, number one. That's not ideal for them. They were very excited to have their new temple in place.
Mm-hmm.
So he ruins the temple. He desecrates it. He probably performs a sacrifice that's not sanctioned, like maybe a pig or something.
Yeah. A lot of people would think that, too. He was basically just rushing ahead and wanting to gain favor with the Jews and kind of doing stupid things. And people were like, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
Wait a second. We know about this guy.
Or he flagrantly just says, I disrespect your religion, and I'm going to offer a pig because I think it's dumb.
Yeah.
I mean,
a lot of people would stand in that corner as well.
Yeah. So he does this thing, and it's the abomination. And Jesus says, when you see that, flee. So in Revelation 12, where we're hanging out, we see this pause in between her giving birth to a child and her being commanded to flee, which Jesus has already done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me that the child she's given birth to tells her what to do and gives her the instructions that she needs. But I wanted to kind of camp out on this 3.5 year thing for just a little bit, because it more than makes an appearance in scripture as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found this fascinating, because this concept of 3.5 years, 42 months, and 1,260 days are all the same.
Yeah.
1,260 days is 3.5 years, 42 months is 3.5 years, and
so on and so forth.
So on and so forth. This idea mentioned with those three concepts is accounted for 7 times in the Bible.
Hmm.
So here's another 7 for you if you're 7 hunting out there, which you should be, because it's crazy.
We're probably going to reach 777 of them before we get to the end of this.
Probably. So out of these 7 times, they all speak to similar characters. It's not like one just goes way off in left field and talks about something completely different. It's all about Israel and the beast / Antichrist. And of these 12 times, the first time it occurs is in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. Oh, hey, we're still open on Daniel. That's convenient.
Oh, yeah.
So we're just going to go backwards here to chapter 7, verse 25. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in time and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time.
There's that again.
There's that. Okay. I have a much more clear way to describe this time. Okay. So a time is a year. This is like a colloquial saying that they had where we would say something like a fortnight.
Okay. Right?
You've heard of this?
Yes.
It's not just a game. A fortnight's like 2 months. So it's just a way, it's just kind of like a colloquial saying, like a time is a year. So this is just
common Jewish speech we're getting here.
Yeah. Okay. Apparently they had a weird way of doing things. So a time is a year. Times
multiple
is plural,
years.
Two. Yeah,
two.
So we're up to three. And half a time, so half of a year.
Mm-hmm.
So 1 year plus 2 year plus a half a year. And you know what? I don't know why they said it this way, but
they probably did all the time and it made perfect sense to them when they read this.
Probably did. Maybe it was even shorter to say, but our language has muddled it up or something. But that is how that works. A time is a year. Times is 2 years. Half a time is half of 1 year. So mm-hmm. 3.5 years. So what this is saying is that this person, which is the Antichrist that this is talking about, is going to, one, wear down the saints of the Most High. So bad time to be a Christian.
Yeah.
Always a good time to be a Christian. It's just going to be unpleasant. I shouldn't say it that
way. Yeah.
He's going to make alterations in time and in law. I'm not sure what alterations in times is completely referring to.
My guess is he'll mess with the calendar or something.
Yeah,
maybe he'll add too. Some holidays or something that exalt him. That's something
to that effect.
About,
And in law, so he's going to make his own rules. Mm-hmm. And they will be given into his hand for this amount of time. So the saints of the Most High will be given into his hand for this amount of time, which lines up with other things that we see later on, too.
Yeah, and again, a lot of people would put this time, times, and half a time moment that he's speaking of here, and this abomination of desolation that we just talked about, and they'll put that at the very beginning of the tribulation, you know, and then there'll be some that actually start off the great tribulation with this segment in time. So,
right.
You know, again, do your own research and tell us where you land on that.
And I encourage that because to me, it feels like all but one of these instances where this phraseology comes up are referring to the second half of the tribulation. Okay. One isn't. So the second time this pops up is in Daniel chapter 12, verse 7. Then I heard a man dressed in linen who was above the waters of the river. This could be Michael, just saying. He was mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
As he raised his right hand and his left toward heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time, as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people and all the events will be completed. So, because of the completion aspect of what this is invoking, it seems like this character, maybe Michael, is
probably Michael
giving a prophecy to Daniel, basically saying at the end of the 3.5 years after this abomination, things will be completed. Essentially, this will be the start of the millennial reign.
Mm.
So that's the second time this pops up. So we've had two time, times, and half a times already. We'll have one more.
So you're speaking of in Revelation alone or Daniel as well for the time, times, and half a time?
We've had two time, times, and half a times in Daniel.
Okay, gotcha.
And those are the only two times that phraseology is mentioned in Daniel.
Okay.
Or the Old Testament in general, for that matter. Then we move to Revelation 11, verse 2, which we read and talked about last week.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't say that. It says 42 months. And it's talking about leaving out the court because it will be trampled by the nations. This is the one that I actually think is referring to the first half of the tribulation period, because it's talking about the temple being set up. And if the temple's not actually in effect and offering sacrifices, I think it's being built.
Yeah, and you can't have the abomination of desolation taking place without it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think this is the one that's actually referring to
the first half.
The first half.
Gotcha.
Oh, excuse me. I actually think there's two referring to the first half.
What's the other mistake?
The next one.
All right.
Revelation 11:3. This one is talking about 1260 days, and it's referring to the authority of the two witnesses. Remember, we had a great time talking about the two witnesses and who they may or may not be in our last podcast. So their ministry is for 1260 days. Now, this one, I think the reason why I was thinking that I feel one is firm in my brain is because some people do put the two witnesses at the second half of the tribulation. I personally put them at the first half of the tribulation because I think they're guarding the temple. Mm. They're protecting it while it's being built. Also, it makes more sense that they would die, because we know that the length of their ministry is 3.5 years, that they would die when the Antichrist gets his 3.5 years of awfulness. So it's kind of like the two witnesses represent God's first half, and then the Antichrist gets the second half, kind of a thing. Mm. Or to put it in terms of football. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you have a football
reference? I don't. Well, I was thinking of the halftime show, but I'm not going to do that. So that's the fourth time that we see this pop up in Scripture. It's referring to the ministry of these individuals. The fifth time is what we just read in Revelation 6, verse 12. The woman is protected in the wilderness for 1,260 days.
Yeah.
So I couldn't find a pattern into when they used time, times, and half a time, 42 months and 1,260 days. So if you have a pattern that you see that makes sense, let us know.
Yeah. I was wondering about that too. They all add up to the same thing, mm-hmm. but there is no pattern. There is no rhyme or reason on why they would use 1,260 days or 42 months or time, right. times, and half a time, 7 years. We don't really know why they choose the verbiage that they do.
You know, you might say, oh, well, the 1,260 days always refers to the first half, and the time, times, and half a time refers to the second half. No, that doesn't line up. That doesn't work out. Like, if you look at it this way, that doesn't necessarily work out that way. Mm-hmm. Or you could say the 42 months, once again, doesn't work out that way either. Because the next time we see time, times, and half a time is the 3.5 years the woman is protected in the wilderness, which we'll read in a little bit in Revelation chapter 12, verse 14. Okay, so either one, the 1,260 days is a different 3.5 years that they're protected mm-hmm. in the wilderness. But that doesn't make any sense. Because the decree is to flee to the wilderness. So it seems like they're the same event, just mentioned twice.
Yeah.
So there's no correlation that I see with the time, times, and half a time.
Especially when you see beforehand, there is the instruction to flee. And then down at the end, again, we'll get there. There is the, you know, she's given wings so that she can flee.
Right.
So we see that there's also provision given by God to flee and then to be protected. Mm-hmm.
And then the final time that this concept comes up, we'll get to in Revelation 13, verse 5. And it says, the beast gets authority for 42 months to speak arrogant blasphemies. So this coincides with what Daniel was saying back in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, about this entity speaking out against the Most High, making alterations in time and in laws and things like that. So, you know, it's interesting that you have these examples of this being used, but these are the seven times it's being used. And they relate to the temple, they relate to Israel, and they relate to the Antichrist. So our major players that we just read in chapter 12, and we'll read in 13, are these only characters that this time, times, and half a time is mentioned. And it's, to me, I think it goes back to what the 70 weeks of Daniel was really about. The exile of Israel for not following the years of Jubilee. Mm-hmm. And the giving them over into the king of Babylon, and the exile with that, the imprisonment that came along with that.
Scattering to the four corners.
Yep. And it just seems like it makes a lot of sense that it all comes back to them being the ones that's relevant to, that those are the people that need to pay attention to those times. But it's also how we get to track the progress of Revelation through this book, just by observing them,
right,
and seeing where they are in this whole process. So, you know, that was my whole sideline on time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days, however you want to put it. They all seem to go back to Israel. Mm-hmm. They have a tie-in to the temple. And I think that the temple being how long that the Gentile nations are told to trample it, in addition to the two witnesses who protect it. And then the Antichrist and his ability to have his unholy ultimate authority for 3.5 years.
Mm. All right, let's move on to the dragon. So again, we're going to be in verse 3, and another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns on his head with 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth so that when she bore a child, he might devour it. So we would say that this is a scene of the enemy's pursuit of Christ when he was born. You know, but we also would put it in a grander scape as well, and we would associate it with the end times and how we see a circular pattern with prophecy, and I think that's what we see happening here.
Yeah, to start off with the dragon wanting to devour the child that the woman was having, Matthew chapter 2, 16 through 18 is relevant to that imagery there. So after Christ was born, Herod... You know, he wasn't particularly a great guy.
Not necessarily.
And he didn't like this idea that there could be potentially be a Christ out there that might uproot his authority. So what's he do as any leader who's scared? He orders that babies get killed. not a great guy. So
yeah.
It says here in Matthew chapter 2, verse 16, then Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi. He became very enraged and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its vicinity from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the Magi. Then what had been spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be comforted because they were no more. So Herod's mad, and likely Satan's working through him, through that anger, through that evil, to try his best to kill Christ. Of course, we know that he didn't kill Christ, and that Mary and Joseph took Christ and fled to Egypt.
Probably for a time, times, and half a time.
Very well. Could have been. Yeah. It would line up pretty well. But that's where that the beast sitting before, standing before the woman to devour the child is most likely referencing is this decree from Herod, which was also a prophecy given through Jeremiah.
What do you make of the 10 horns on his head with the 7 diadems?
So to get into that whole side of things, we really have to jump back to Daniel.
Let me guess, chapter 7.
Chapter 7. Shocking, isn't it? I was going to start with verses 1 through 8 here. Oh, actually, I'll start at verse 2. Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. So once again, four winds of heaven, they're doing some stuff. And that great sea, which we see the beast rising up out of in Revelation, is popping up here as well. And four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind was also given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one resembling a bear, and it was raised up on one side. And 3 ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And thus they said to it, arise, devour much meat. After this I kept looking, and behold, another one like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. And the beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying, and extremely strong, and it had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them, and 3 of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. And behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man and the mouth uttering great boasts.
So we're going to be probably reading that one again on Revelation 13, because that's going to be important to the false prophet and to the beast in general. So we're going to make some definitions there. But for today, we'll just talk about how this relates to verse 3.
Right. So before we jump into this fourth beast, just for people's own information, these beasts are very clearly representing different kingdoms that had come after the Babylonian one.
Yeah.
So the first beast is the Babylonian Empire, and Jeremiah 49 verses 12 through 22 even used a lion and eagle metaphor or images for Nebuchadnezzar, the king that essentially was the one that took Israel into captivity. second beast is the Medo-Persian Empire. The three ribs are likely to represent Babylon, Egypt, and Lydia, which are the three kingdoms that they overcame, the Medes and Persians. They were known for having large armies that overwhelmed and crushed their opponents. And the third beast is the Greek Empire, which was essentially run by Alexander the Great, and he conquered the entire world by the age of 28. And he's noted for saying, alas, there's nothing left for me to conquer. You know, he kind of did it all by the age of 28. Well, after his death, his empire was divided into four parts, probably symbolizing the four heads and the four wings of that particular beast. Well, this fourth beast, many commentaries just go right into saying is Rome. Mm-hmm. And it really makes a lot of sense that it's Rome. Why is it Rome? Well, the seven heads and ten horns likely refer to the original ten kingdoms of Rome, which were subdued by the little horn. Rome also did not ever fall to another country.
Right, it just got divided.
It got divided and it crumbled within. And eventually, and some historians might say that the Nords conquered them. But that's not true. They didn't really conquer them. They just raided the coastal regions around all the Roman Empire. Rome never truly collapsed. So this fourth beast, as it relates to end times, is likely the revival of the Roman Empire. Mm. And when we get into Revelation 13, we see that the beast that rises up out of the sea is kind of like a hodgepodge combination of all the beasts put together. Mm-hmm. And it would lead you to believe that this beast in chapter 12, which we know is Satan, because it clearly says later on that that dragon, that serpent of old, Satan, like it really, it makes it super hard for you to not believe that the dragon's Satan. So we're all cool on that part. It seems like this is an incarnation, that the Roman Empire rises up once again, some sort of European empire rises up out of the Roman ashes, as it were, becomes a kingdom again, likely takes over the world, and that the Antichrist that comes behind it is the embodiment of all those four kingdoms that ruled the world at one particular point. And Satan and this fourth beast creature somewhat merge into an indwelling type of a one creature sort of scenario. Is kind of how I look at it. That's what makes sense to me to understand the seven heads that this creature has. Was possibly Satan still living through the remnants of that empire, that he'll eventually merge with the final empire of the Antichrist.
Yeah. And when I look at Daniel and I think about the vision that there was about the statue and the boots of clay and iron, and how that so much sounds like modern Europe today. And it, you know, sort of just being a hodgepodge. I like that wording that you just used, a hodgepodge of the kingdoms that have merged together. So, you know, and then we would kind of relate that to where we are in this part of the story. And that, that certainly works for me.
So then to jump on through verse or chapter seven, a couple of verses to,
23.
Yeah. I was going to start at 19.
Okay.
Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast. So this has really been on his mind for a while, right?
We already know that Daniel gets sick when he has a vision on his mind.
Yeah. The fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And the meaning of the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up and before which three of them fell, namely that the horn which had eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. I kept looking, and the horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be the fourth kingdom of the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms, and will devour the whole earth, and tread it down, and crush it. As for the ten horns, out of this kingdom, ten kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue three kings. And he will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints. Does this sound familiar?
Yeah.
Of the Most High, and he will intend to make alterations in time and law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. So we know Rome already existed. We know it was the fourth terrible beast. And it came, as we've said, it didn't never truly fall. So it will be revived. It will most likely have 10 divisions again, just like Rome originally did. But the Antichrist is going to do something that essentially throws down three of them, and he rises into their place. So that's an interesting junction there. But also, this is happening over, once again, 2,000 plus years. So we have multiple whooshes in here of time happening. So we know Rome's already been, but it will be revived. I feel like Satan is reviving that Roman Empire. The Antichrist steps in and assumes more power through that whole process.
Yeah, through the seeds that have already been planted through the beast, yeah.
Yeah.
So one more thing that I wanted to talk about in the first section here in Revelation 12, 1 through 6, was this thing that has really kind of caught fire here in America and around the world that happened in 2017. Now, I'm not saying that this is something that I sign off on or that I believe necessarily was a fulfillment of prophecy, but I do look at the events that took place, and I just want to lay them out there for the listener to kind of muse on and to think about and to pray about and see what this meant, if anything at all. And maybe it was just a nod to this chapter in the Bible, because who knows? Because God's great, and he just shows us signs in the heavens. And I kind of want to point back to Genesis 1:14. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day and from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years." So we see that the signs in the heavens are supposed to be for night, day, you know, seasons, but it's also supposed to be for signs. So like a beacon, if you will, just these events that would take place. You know, this idea is echoed in Psalm 33:6. "By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth, all of their hosts." Psalm 19:1, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaim his handiwork." We actually learn at this time that the Jews built their calendar off of moon cycles. Mm-hmm. We also know that there is a really far way you can go with this, and that's astrology. You know, we don't want to worship these things, and we don't want to have our lives dictated by the signs in the skies and star signs and things like that. In fact, the Bible is very specific on speaking against that because it's a form of witchcraft. I have references for that if you want to track me down later. I didn't write them down here, but they exist, and I was reading them today. So trust
they're
me,
real.
That's out there. So I kind of just wanted to talk about the things that happened in 2017 on September 23rd. And again, I just want to reiterate, this is for you to study. The reason I'm bringing it up today is because it was a hot topic. So I just want to throw it out there for all y'all to do your own research on. So what we saw, and it was like 2013 or 14, we saw these four blood moons that landed on Jewish feasts. And so we see these blood moons, and there are those that would say that that was signs in the sky pointing to events that would happen later. And then we see this Jewish feast date come up, and you would see that after that we would have a lull, the time of repentance. So this time, if you are into Jewish festivals like I am, and I know you are too, a lull is a 40-day period of repentance. And then after that, a lull, we saw this eclipse that swept across our entire country. And it basically just split it right in half. And really, an interesting thing happened on this is that it swept across seven different Salems in our country, starting with Salem, Oregon, seven different Salems. And Salem comes from Jerusalem, the word Jerusalem. So it's this shalom. It's peace be with you.
Right.
So then we saw the sign in heaven that really resembled this Revelation 12 sign. what it was in the stars. We had the constellation Virgo, and we had the constellation Leo. And Leo is a constellation of nine stars. And then what we had was three planets joining Leo to put 12 stars above the head of the Virgin Virgo. And then we had the king planet gestating inside Virgo for 9 months straight to the day, and then her giving birth on that day. And at that time, we had the moon at her feet, and then the sun was in the constellation to the perspective of Jerusalem. So that was really interesting. And so they did some research on this sign, and when has it happened in the past? And they found that it happened two other times in history. And I don't know how accurate this stuff is. I just think it's really interesting because they took solarium and then they just rolled it back to dates. Mm-hmm. And they found that this had happened exactly 6,000 years ago. So basically at the beginning of creation, mm-hmm. at least what we would say. And then it happened at the birth of Christ.
Right.
Then it happened September 23rd. I am not saying that anything specific happened for that day. There was a lot of people calling for the rapture. Do you remember that?
Yeah, a lot of people said rapture or just some beginning of end times events to take place. There was a lot of talk around the temple around that time. People thought maybe the temple will somehow get the okay to build or different things along those lines. So there was a lot of speculation flying around.
Yeah, there certainly was, and it certainly was a big date in history. Now, what it meant for anything, I'm not sure. If I had my money on anything, I don't know. Maybe somebody bad was born. I'm not saying Antichrist. I'm just saying maybe somebody was born. I'm not even sure. I just know it was a really interesting thing that caught a lot of attention because of a lot of things that basically landed on that same day. We had Rosh Hashanah on that day. It was mm-hmm. a Feast of Trumpets. We also had two hurricanes that were swirling around in the Atlantic. One was Maria and one was Jose, which means Mary and Joseph. It also landed on the 50th year after Israel won the 1967 war. So I believe that was the Six-Day War.
Six-Day War.
And that also landed 70 years after Jerusalem was established for their people. So they came into their land in 1948. We historically know that, but 1947 was when Jerusalem was allowed to come back into their mm-hmm. land. And there was all of these convergences of a lot of things that took place on that day. We got 50, we got 70. There was two other events that happened before that. There was the Balfour Declaration, which I believe was exactly 100 years before that. And there was another event that was 120 years exactly to the day. And I can't recall what it was, but that was another interesting thing that had come up. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of conversation wrapped around this event. I wanted to bring it up today simply because we're on Revelation 12.
A lot of people were pointing to Revelation 12:1. Coming into a fulfillment back in September 23rd.
Yeah. Well, and they 17. Were taking this birth of the child. They were looking at Jupiter, the king planet. Mm-hmm. And there's people saying that that was Jesus coming back.
Right.
And then that we'd have the rapture because we have this image here in verse 5 where Jesus, where the baby was caught up to God in his throne.
I think there was even Jewish rabbis calling for, speculating that
the Messiah
would be born. Because to them, Jesus isn't their Messiah.
Yeah.
And so they were thinking, hey, this seems like this would be pretty logical. The thing that, you know, like you said, maybe somebody bad was born. It's an interesting thought because, you know, the Magi, which we will talk about in a little bit on this podcast with reference to this beast trying to eat up Christ after he's born through the actions of Herod. Well, the Magi were what sparked Herod to decree that. Herod really didn't have a clue what was going on until these Magi show up saying, hey, we hear your Christ is born. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's figure that out.
Yeah.
And how did they know? Well, it's an interesting thought, but it's one that suggests that Daniel was well aware of these signs in heaven and how to look for them and what to observe, like what you said with this planet being here with the Virgin and these different things, that Daniel had a really keen insight into this, so keen that he trained the Magi of the Babylonian time to look for this, mm-hmm. and that they passed this down over hundreds and hundreds of years looking for the Messiah. So that when they saw these things happen in the sky, they were like, oh, hey, remember what Daniel said about these things? We better go find the Messiah.
Yeah.
So it's a idea. It holds some water in the sense that Daniel was definitely able to have taught them this. He is likely one of the only people who would have even known what to look for. Mm-hmm. Something definitely provoked the Magi into going and looking. Of course, it says they follow the star of Bethlehem. I think that's really interesting. I don't know when this is going to air completely, but there is a Christmas star this year. So if you happen to be out in the night sky on December 21st through the 26th, I think it is, you'll see Jupiter and Saturn lined up, and it will make a little bit brighter effect than what you'd normally see. I don't know if it's enough that you'd recognize it. And personally, I don't even think that's what the star of Bethlehem was, but it's interesting. It's interesting stuff that these things are happening in the sky, that people have been watching this for years, but we don't put very much value on it in our Western culture. And if you do, you're kind of thought of as being a crazy conspiracy theorist kook.
Yeah.
When in reality, many cultures before us really
looked.
They had things they were watching for.
Let's think about the wise men, because, you know, we were just talking about that, where they were looking in the sky for the star. Mm-hmm. They were actively seeking this thing out. And so what happened was they went out to see the baby Jesus. I mean, they were thought to have been out looking, you know, for 3 years, 3 to 7 years, tracking him down and seeing him. So there was a very anticlimactic thing that happened. So we see the sign, that sign in that sky where Jesus was born, but almost nobody caught it. Mm-hmm. Almost nobody caught it except the faithful that were watching for it. And I'm not saying that we all need to be watching the stars at night, but I am saying, let's not count things out. Let's not assume that things meant nothing.
Right.
You know, we are called in Luke to look up because our redemption draws near, you know, and to be waiting for his return and to be excited about that.
Yeah.
And I think that was, to me, a reminder of that. And I don't know what it meant. I don't know if it meant anything at all, but I don't know.
You know, I don't think that it's what's fulfilled in Revelation 12, but it might be what's mocked.
Yeah, it could have been a nod to it, or it might have been a mockery of it. Yeah.
Satan loves to mock God. I think he finds joy, for lack of a better word, in that. I think you see that a lot, especially when we get into Revelation 13, with his attempt at building his own Trinity. He's so out of the clue of to what the Trinity is and the love between the Trinity that he doesn't understand it, but he tries to mock it with himself and the Antichrist and the false prophet. Mm-hmm. So if it is true that Christ was born under a sign like this, and it was so important that Daniel taught it to the Magi, if that is a true thing, I would think that some backhanded way Satan would want to, if he saw something coming up, mock it, that he'd want to do something on that particular event to profane it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so this has been the first 6 chapters in Revelation 12. We hope you will join us next week for Revelation 12, 7 and on, and we will discuss Satan being thrown down and then this great victory in heaven, Michael the angel, and going on through 13 and down through 17, we see that Satan wages war against the woman and then the people that follow Christ. So next week, we hope you will join us. Thank you for tuning in to this Revelation series. We love you, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Center Podcast Network. Be sure to like and subscribe for daily and weekly content. Once again, if you would like more information about Faith Center, you can visit lg4square.com, lg4square.com, and you can email the show at podcast@lg4square.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless.